We begin with a reading from Paul's letter to the Corinthians, first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 2. Paul writes, "When I came to you, brothers and sisters, I did not come proclaiming the mystery of God to you in lofty words or wisdom, for I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And I came to you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. My speech and my proclamation were not with plausible words of wisdom, but with a demonstration of the Spirit and of power, so that your faith might rest not on human wisdom, but on the power of God." The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. There's a strange feature of the New Testament as we have it. And it might go unnoticed because we're pretty familiar with it by this point. But as Christians, we have this story of resurrection. We have this story of God raising Jesus from the dead, of God taking this tomb which houses a dead body and opening it up and this body walking out from the grave. We have this story of resurrection. And yet, the New Testament writers, and this is consistent from the Gospel writers to Paul and those who have written the other letters of the New Testament, we have this story of resurrection, and yet they spend so much time on the cross. Fleming Rutledge, who is a theologian, fantastic theologian, I might add, writes in her book, The Crucifixion, "In all four Gospels, the events prior to the Passion," which is the suffering and cross of Jesus, "the events prior to the Passion are structured to be a prologue to the cross and to find their culmination in it." And this truth about the centrality of Jesus' Passion, His suffering, His death, has posed a challenge to Christians from the very early days of Christianity. Nowhere more so than the city of Corinth, which was a city all about image and all about prosperity and all about the words you say and the manner in which you say it, about external appearances. What would happen in Corinth, as we read later on in Paul's letter to them, is that they would gather for their Christian gatherings, their worship services, if you will, for their agape meals. And first would come the wealthy and the free Christians of Corinth, and they would come and they would pig out, basically. I mean, they would feast, they would drink, they would have a good old time. And then later in the evening, once all of the slaves and servants and the poor people had finished their day's work, they would come and they would basically be eating scraps from the table. And the rest of the congregation that had started was already drunk and merry, and they were just getting there tired with barely anything to eat and drink. And we see in how they talked about their theology, they had created this kind of pseudo-Christian theology to justify all this, that Jesus is raised, and so we don't have to worry about suffering, we don't have to think about these things, we're already there, we've arrived. And so we can just be joyful and have fun. We can get all the blessings of Jesus without facing the hard realities that exist even within our community right here, the injustices and the divisions that are right in front of our faces. And so Paul, in his letter to them, puts the emphasis where the Gospels do, on the cross. He says, "When I came to you, brothers and sisters, I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified." And in chapter 11, when he talks about the Lord's Supper and how they practice this meal, he starts off and he says this. He says, now in the following instructions, I do not commend you. He starts off right there. I have nothing good to say about the way you do your worship services, about all this stuff that's going on here. And then he says, and these are words that we say in our liturgy as well. He says, for as often as you eat the bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes again. In other words, every time you gather, every time you eat the bread and you drink the cup, you are to be witnesses of the cross. Shelley Rambo, who we've heard from earlier this season, wrote a book called The Spirit and Trauma, and she suggests that like the Corinthians, much of, especially she's talking about the American church, has missed the mark on what it means to be witnesses. And this is a word that we use. This is a word that's been really core to Christianity. And she says, we've missed the mark on what exactly that means. What it means to be a Christian witness. And so today we're going to look at what it does mean to be a witness and what it does mean to be a witness of the cross. And so for that, we go very appropriately and literally to those who actually witnessed the cross. We're going to read from Luke chapter 23, verses 44 through 49. Jesus is on the cross at this point. It says, it was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m, while the sun's light failed and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Then Jesus, crying with a loud voice, said, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. Having said this, he breathed his last. When the centurion saw what had taken place, he praised God and said, certainly this man was innocent. And when all the crowds who had gathered there for this spectacle saw what had taken place, they returned home, beating their breasts. But all his acquaintances, including the women who had followed him from Galilee, stood at a distance watching these things. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise be to you, O Christ. I've offered you a few definitions of trauma throughout this series. This morning I want to give you an image of trauma, which is trauma is falling into the cracks of the world. Trauma is being exposed to violence. It's experiencing the randomness of natural disasters. It's coming into contact with unexpected terrorism or living in the constant fear of a war zone or simply bearing witness to unspeakable evil. And I call it falling through the cracks because no one wants to deal with any of this. No one wants to face these things. And so when we tell ourselves stories of the world, when we live our day-to-day life, we skip over these things. We try to pretend that we basically live in a safe, fair, and orderly world. And even in the church, sometimes we do this. We come and we have a whole phrase for it, our Sunday best. We want to be smiling and upbeat and positive, have positive music and stories. We want to create this scene where everyone is happy and everything is okay. The world is as it should be, nice and orderly. But when you experience trauma, you fall into the cracks in that story and in that scene where you can't pretend anymore. And so this morning, we're going to re-examine our relationship to the cross, what it means to be witnesses to the crucified God, and ask, what is it that we witness when we witness the cross? And there are three things, at least, but this morning we're going to talk about three things that we become witnesses to if we are people of the cross, if we are witnessing to the crucified God. The first thing is that we are witnesses to suffering. The church bears witness to suffering. The women who followed Jesus to the cross that are mentioned in Luke 23, and we know from John's gospel that he was there too. Those who bear witness to the cross, those who stick with Jesus, this is really obvious point, but they bear witness to suffering. They watch it. They experience it. They don't turn their face away. They're there for it. As we just read, all his acquaintances, including the women who had followed him from Galilee, stood at a distance watching these things. And then after they rested on the Sabbath, they bear witness again to death. On the first day of the week at early dawn, they came to the tomb, taking the spices that they had prepared. They look right in its face. And honestly, in the ancient world, like, you couldn't avoid it nearly as well as we can today. We have lots of ways that we can avoid suffering and death, that we can close ourselves off to it. But these first Christians, these first followers of Jesus, bear witness to suffering. Because in the cross, we see the world suffering on display. We see the groaning creation that Paul talks about in Romans 8. We see the groaning of the Hebrew slaves that God hears in Exodus chapter 2. We hear the groaning like the blood of Abel that God hears after Cain kills him in Genesis 4. In the scriptures, we hear that over and over again, God hears this groaning. God bears witness to this suffering. And when we go to the cross, we join in God's viewpoint. We join God in bearing witness to the suffering that exists in the world. As we come to the cross, we are drawn into human suffering. And it is the death then of pretense and pretending like everything is okay. So part of our witness as Christians is to bear witness and give voice to the suffering that exists in our lives, but in the world around us. We don't turn away from it. Second thing we bear witness to is that we are witnesses to injustice. We bear witness to injustice. Let's look for a moment at the centurion who stands at the foot of the cross, right there with Jesus and the crowds. And let's ask ourselves, what was it exactly that they witnessed on that day? It says, when the centurion saw what had taken place, he praised God and said, "Certainly this man was innocent." And that's the same word we use for righteous or just. This man was in the right. And he was crucified. What does that mean? That this Roman centurion has come and borne witness to the cracks in his own empire's story. That he realizes that he has been party to an injustice that was done against this man who was innocent and righteous and just at the hands of the people that he is serving, at the hands of the empire in which he claims citizenship. And when all the crowds who had gathered there for this spectacle saw what had taken place, they returned home beating their breasts. They too realize, they go home, and they realize this wasn't right. Probably many of these were Jews, and what they bear witness to is the cracks in their own religious system. They realize, wow, we have been party to. We have borne witness to something that just isn't right and isn't good and isn't fair, isn't just. To this point, James Cone, theologian, he actually died last year, wrote a book called The Cross and the Lynching Tree. And Cone marvels in this book that self-proclaimed Christians in the United States could bear witness to the lynching of black people and never make a connection to the cross. Cone writes, in the lynching era between 1880 to 1940, white Christians lynched nearly 5,000 black men and women in a manner with obvious echoes of the Roman crucifixion of Jesus. Yet these Christians, and he puts that in quotes, did not see the irony or contradiction in their actions. And then he goes on to note a series of both material and symbolic ways in which lynching and the cross bear a striking resemblance. And then he concludes by saying this: the crucifixion of Jesus by the Romans in Jerusalem and the lynching of blacks by whites in the United States are so amazingly similar that one wonders what blocks the American Christian imagination. In other words, he's saying that for Christians, white Christians in the United States, that our failure to witness to the injustice of lynching reveals our failure to witness truly to the cross of Jesus Christ. And we still struggle to face injustices, especially of our own people, of people who we count ourselves a part of their group or tribe. And this reveals the way that we continue to fail to bear witness to the cross. We want things to be nice and orderly. Everything's okay. You know, maybe those people are doing bad things, but mostly our people are just and fair. Everything is good and okay. Nothing to see here. And that is a failure on the part of the church to bear witness truly to the cross. And not only that, but we are also, when we fail to do that, to bear witness, to be a people who bear witness and give voice to injustice, we miss a spiritual opportunity for ourselves. Because if we could truly sit in the cracks and bear witness to the stories of our black neighbors or our Native American neighbors, to the stories of low-wage workers who make our clothes and toys and so much else, we would actually be drawn more deeply into the cross and into, more intimately, into true communion with the crucified one who meets us in those cracks. Indeed, to bear witness to the cross is to have our eyes open to the reality of injustice, but also to listen to the stories and to bear witness to injustice helps us to go deeper into the mystery of the cross. So, as Christians, as people who put crosses up all over the place around us, we are witnesses to suffering, we are witnesses to injustice. We don't turn away from these things, we give voice to them, we're honest about them. We call them out if they need to be called out. And third, we're witnesses to the unknown. Shelley Rambo uses the phrase, we're witnesses to the shattering of knowable worlds, which I just love but may not be meaningful to you, so I'm just going to call it the unknown. She essentially says that Christians have traditionally thought of our witnessing as the passing on or speaking of truths that we have come to know and be certain about. And she says, what if we're actually more to be witnesses of openness to the mystery of what God is doing in this world in places and ways that we would have never guessed or known or expected or seen? That as people of the cross, we bear witness to what we don't know. And this is what I think Paul in some ways is getting at back in 1 Corinthians. And this is in chapter 1. He writes this. Let me turn some pages here. He writes, but God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, things that are not, to reduce to nothing things that are, so that no one might boast in the presence of God. He is the source of your life in Christ Jesus, who became for us wisdom from God and righteousness and sanctification and redemption, in order that, as it is written, let the one who boasts, boasts in the Lord. In essence, the second we think we have a grasp on who God is and what blessing is and where goodness is and where redemption is happening and all the things that catch our eye, the cross shatters that and says, no, I'm actually in this other place, in the thing that you think is foolish now, the thing that you think is low and despised now, that's actually where I'm doing this redemption thing. In our experience of trauma, the world that we know or the world that we want to believe is shattered. And so trauma does not just exist as a past event, but it is the current struggle of living in a world that you are looking at through cracked or shattered lenses. And so Rambo talks about the difference between the crisis of death, like this is the experience of trauma. The event of trauma is that I'm facing death, whether it's literal physical death or whether it is some other kind of death or loss. It's a crisis of death. How am I going to survive is our question. But then beyond that, we have a crisis of life, which is, how do I go on living in this world after I've experienced this, after I've seen this reality, after I've gone down the rabbit hole and my eyes have been opened to the suffering or to this injustice or to this even salvation in this place that I thought was God forsaken? How do I go on living in this new world? And so if you listen to veterans who come back from war, you hear them talk again and again, not just about the difficulty of war, but of the difficulty of returning home from war. You know, how can I just go to the grocery store and bring home avocados for dinner or take my kid to soccer practice while also carrying the knowledge of violence and suffering of the world that I experienced when I was in the war zone? Like, these two worlds collide, and it's like a shattering of, like, I can't live this life the same way I once did. If you've been someone who's experienced an attack or a natural disaster of some kind, and you look around and you survived it, but everyone's going along like things are normal, when you now know that disaster could strike at any moment because you've been there. You've been in the crack. You've experienced that crack in the safe and secure and orderliness of the world. As witnesses of the cross, we know, or we should know, that the simple stories that we tell ourselves about the world are not the whole story. So often for people, religion is, this is the truth. This is how the world is. This is who God is, etc. All these truths that we pass on, that we make sense of the world with. But what does it mean to have a religion with the cross front and center? Where when we come to it, everything we know about God and about the world and ourselves is shattered. Paul writes, "For since in the wisdom of God the world did not know God through wisdom, God decided through the foolishness of our proclamation to save those who believe." That our salvation comes in the foolishness of the world, the places we would never think to look, the worlds that we would never construct or want to create in our own minds. That's where God saves us. We stand as Christians in this shattering place, in the cracks, in the glitches of our world. And that, we say, is where we begin to really know God. Because God can never be captured by human words or doctrines or systems. See, all the words and doctrines and systems that we talk about on Sunday morning, you might experience God here, but they're really so that you can go back into the world in the midst of suffering, in the midst of injustice, and know, okay, maybe God is here. Maybe God is here in this place. The cross is a portal through all of these shadows of truth, our words and our worship songs and our Bibles even, all of these shadows are truth, of truth. The cross draws us into reality. Reality. Deeper, more complex, more mysterious than anything we could give words to is what God is and where God is. And this is terrifying, frankly. To have a faith, we have lost this over centuries and centuries. To have a faith with the cross at the center is a terrifying thing. Because we want the world to feel safe at all times and orderly at all times and fair and just at all times. We don't want that narrative to be disrupted. Maybe it's one of the reasons that G.K. Chesterton wrote, "The Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found difficult and left untried." Instead of actually being witnesses of the cross, we've created a religion around other things that are called Jesus. Because all of this goes against our self-protective, comfort and safety-seeking impulses to sit and witness to our own cracks and trauma and sit with another person and bear witness to theirs. So, as Christians, we're witnesses to suffering, we're witnesses to injustice, we're witnesses to the unknown of God and of the world. And at this point, some of you might be thinking, well, what about resurrection then? What about Easter? I mean, we're going to be talking about that in a couple of weeks. But shouldn't this make us happy and joyful? Right? And what I would say to that is, as we read the New Testament, what we see is that the resurrection doesn't nullify or overshadow this kind of life, this kind of witness to suffering and injustice, this terrifying unknown. It doesn't overshadow that. It doesn't nullify it. It affirms it. The resurrection vindicates the kind of life that Jesus lived. The resurrection says this kind of cross-carrying life that witnesses to suffering and injustice and to the unknown that Jesus lived, this is the kind of life that is stronger even than death. In other words, the cross isn't like this moment in the story and then the resurrection is forever then. It's the resurrection is actually pointing us back to the cross and saying, here's the kind of life that you live as a witness to suffering and injustice and the unknown. The cross means that God has stepped into the cracks and borne witness to humanity's suffering and injustice. On the cross, one world was shattered, and it is through this shattering that a new world is created. And so, friends, as we come to the table today, we come as witnesses. Witnesses to the reality and the truth that we don't go into the cracks of life alone. That when we come to this table where things are broken and shed, that Jesus has gone there first. And indeed, if we will go there, if we will go to those hard and dark places, we will be invited into a communion with the divine, into a communion with love, into a communion with grace that is far deeper and more transformative than any world or religion that we could create on our own. Let's pray. God, you are in the cracks that we fear so much. As we approach your table, may we approach trembling at the reality of your invitation to bear witness to suffering and to injustice and to the unknown. Help us to tremble at that, to grasp in some way the magnitude of that and the ways that it pushes against everything we know and want and believe. And at the same time, give us boldness to approach this table, believing that you are there and that where you are, is the best place that we could possibly find ourselves. We approach this table, Lord, with fear and trembling, and with a boldness that rests not in ourselves, but in the power of your grace and the power of your love. Amen. As we approach the table this morning, we will first sing just one verse of this hymn, and that will lead us into a time of meditation on the cross. And what I invite you to do during that time is to pick a cross. They're all over the place. There's one here with a big light shining on it. There's another one there with a big light shining on it. There's crosses, probably other places. Maybe you have one even on you. And you might hold it. If you have a necklace or something like that, you might even hold that necklace. But find a cross and just bear witness to it. Ask what it is that you are witnessing to, where God is in that. And in that, prepare your hearts for communion.